Thomas extraordinaire. I mean, this guy does everything. You can go out and sip like 18 different beers and like man on the street it. And then you come back and tell us about, you know, the biggest snowstorm in D.C. Have they asked you to anchor yet?
Yeah, well, I've occasionally done Good Day DC here and there, but that's about it. You know, foot pedals and scripts scare me. So I like being able to be free and be off script. And I mean, come on, who wouldn't want to go out and drink beer for a job? Every time they're like, you want to go to the brewery? I'm like, hell yeah, I want to go to the brewery. Get me down there. Let's get drinking at 6 a.m. Come on.
I feel like I see every time I turn you on for some reason, you're like at a winery or a brewery. I'm like, how did Mike Thomas get like the brewery assignment every week?
Well, because I'm like the college frat kid still, even though I'm like 31 years old now and then getting up there. But I guess you could say I got that college experience. So they're going to roll that over for as long as they can.
I was going to ask you about that. Okay, you have a very youthful look, though. It's funny that you say that, right? Because you do sort of have this like college boy, you know, you have a really young face. Like, I didn't even know you were 31. Like, you're I mean, you could literally be 26.
Surprise.
Surprise. Do you like that? I mean, you know, there's nothing you can really do about your looks, right? I mean, I guess we could all have plastic surgery, but you do have this very youthful look. Has that served you well?
Yeah, so I would say it kind of sucked at first, because particularly when I first got here, when I started at Fox, like I look like I was 13, and you know, it's hard to take. And I know from like a viewer's standpoint, it's hard to like look at this little dweeb on air and go, hey, like, does this one actually know what he's talking about? But it's nice to have finally gotten to that point where you thought I was mid-20s. So if I can stop the train right here, that would be great. I have, the older I've gotten, I have definitely taken it much more as a compliment when I'm hitting the bars and they're like, we need your ID. Is this a fake? I'm like, yeah, no, please check it. Call the cops. I don't care. This is wonderful.
Oh my God. Yeah. You must get carded all the time.
Oh, yeah, I do. In fact, last time I was in Pittsburgh at the bars downtown, the lady or the bartender actually like thought it was a fake ID and had me go over to the cop. And she was like, she was very smug about it, too, thinking she caught me. So she was like, you know what? There's a cop right there. Why don't you go have him verify your age for me?
Wow.
And I said, sure, no problem. And I went, I brought the cop over. And then, you know, we cheersed at the end once he verified my age and that it wasn't a fake. But again, I take it as a compliment. I'll stay young for as long as you can, right? Because you got to.
Hey, look, I mean, for you, you have like the next 85 years in television if you keep up this pace. I mean, you know, you don't age. It's like amazing. Now, you know, I've asked a lot of the women, because a lot of the women that have been on this podcast, anchors, meteorologists, they're single, they're like looking, you know, or viewers ask them out all the time. And I'm curious, because I think most of the guys I've interviewed for Key Card for this round have been married. I'm interested to know, like, what's happened with you and like viewers asking you out over the years? Because I'll tell you, I had a podcast client to the Sarah Fraser show, and she would tell me that she would advertise more if I could get her a date with you.
And
I was like, well, I think there's this thing at Fox, payola plug. I don't think I could really, as much as I want to take your $10,000 to get you a date with Mike Thomas, I feel like this is going to backfire. She was like obsessed with you. So over the years, how have the women been? Have they treated you okay? Like, or are they like in your deal? This woman was so hot for you.
Well, man, I'm flattered. And Sarah, if you had only told me, we could have split that money. Come on, there was money to be made.
No, we really could have.
I have gotten a decent amount of requests, I guess you can say, particularly once it was made known on air at one point by another anchor here that I was single for a period of time. And then the requests started flying in of like, hey, I would love to grab a cup of coffee with you, or grab a, like, let's go for a walk, and let's talk weather and stuff like that.
Viewers at home,
no one has ever been inappropriate with me, which is super, super grateful. But viewers have all been sweet every time they've asked. And I'm one of those guys who, and I'm scared to put this out there, but I try to always reply to any message I get.
Oh boy.
So I always felt, you know, bad saying like, oh, I'm sorry, like I don't do that. And then, you know, recently it's been like, I'm now taken. So obviously there's no more dating anymore. But I'm always flattered every time I get the requests in. And it's it's a good feeling, I guess you can say.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good that you take it in stride. You know, some of the, of course, I feel like it's always different for women, you know.
Because I've seen some of the messages that the ladies, some of the ladies here get. And, you know, some people can be rather forward and rude. And I'm shocked at some of the pictures people will send. But it's definitely different, or at least my experience as a male in this business has been different, in that I have not received in almost eight years here now, I have not gotten any of that.
Really? Wow. Oh my God. God, is that a double standard right there? I mean, that's right. Crazy.
Well, now I'm scared that they're all going to be flying in and everybody's going to be like, hey, picture.
Yeah, right. Right. You've never gotten a nude until like this podcast. And then you'll be like, you'll get some listeners, some viewer.
Yeah, right. I'll just get inundated with nude after nude after nude. And most of them will probably throw out, but some of them are like,
You know what? This isn't bad. This is an option. But you are taken, right? I mean, I, you and I were talking the other day. We were at the holiday party for Fox. So you've been in a relationship now for over a year.
We're just beyond 13 months now. So we were a pandemic relationship that we formed. And, I met her online. And we were, I'm a little bit of a nerd. So we were gaming and, she popped into one of my games and we just got along real well. And, things kind of took, we found out, you know, she lived in New York, I lived here, and we were like, you know what? That's not fair. That's not far. Let's hang out, because we were doing nothing during the pandemic.
Wow.
So we ended up, and I know you weren't supposed to do it, so this was bad. But yeah, we did cross the state borders back then. But it was just us two. We didn't go anywhere. We didn't do anything. We were both like healthy, so we just kind of started hanging out together. And then the relationship ended up coming from that. So,
Mike Thomas, rebel in the pandemic.
Slight rebel. But again, I thankfully have never had COVID. I'm vaccinated. I know it wasn't good to do that, but. We were safe about it. We didn't hang out in crowds. We didn't do anything with people. It was just her and I.
You got to risk it for love, you know? I mean, and good for you. And it worked out. That's amazing. It's working out.
It's working out. Yeah, you know, you never know until the ring's on the finger. And then half the time these days, you never know even after that.
So are you guys, she's still in New York. Are you guys still commuting?
No. She moved in. She moved
Whoa!
Down. Yes. Whoa.
Holy. She moved down to, okay.
She moved down a few months back. Her name's Sherry. She's a total sweetie. She's on my Instagram a little bit. But yeah, she's been great. I don't know. She just, we hit at a moment where, because of COVID, about 8 months into our relationship, she had this window where it was, you know, I'm going to leave my job and because I have all these offers elsewhere. And she was like, I can either take one of those, but then I'll probably be here a few years, or we can roll the dice and I'll find a job down your way and we can just try this thing out and see how it goes.
Oh my God. Yes. You guys were betting on love. I love it.
We were betting on love. We rolled the dice. And you know what? I'll say, I don't want to trash talk my girlfriend on the podcast here, because I know she's going to be number one to listen to it and she's going to write down every word I say about her. There were ups and downs in the beginnings, as I think any time you come together in a relationship and you start living under the same roof, there were swings. There were moments that like we weren't sure we were going to make it. But I would say we finally hit that nice honeymoon phase where now she understands me. I understand her. We both work crazy hours. She does veterinary medicine and obviously, I do the early morning weather, and she actually works at a 24/7 emergency clinic.
Oh my
God. So she does the overnight shift there, and I do obviously early mornings here, which works for our schedules. But at the same time, you know, the nighttime approaches, and we both start getting grumpy because it's time for bed, and stuff like that can happen. But so far, I would say, look, I love her, and it's working out. So
that's awesome. It's so true. I do feel like it was the same way. Like, I started dating Dan, and then 5 months later, I moved to New York and, like, tried to dump him twice. So, I mean, it's like you definitely – it's something about the first year or two. Like, if you can make it through that and begin to learn each other's, like, patterns and things that you like. And yeah, after that, it's really good. So good for you guys for, like, hanging in there. She moved here. That's something amazing that came from COVID.
Yeah, no, it really was. It was luck of the draw, because I went through my last relationship was rough, and it ended rough right before the pandemic. Like right at the start of the pandemic was actually when my last one ended. And, you know, it was one of those cases where like I just wasn't looking for love during who was during COVID.
Yeah.
But it just so happened we got just along so well. I was like, let's give it another shot.
This is kind of meant to be. Yeah. All right. Let's talk your career. You have an interesting career because you grew up in the D.C. area, right? Mm-hmm. You grew up in Prince George's County. Where in Prince George's County?
So I grew up in Calverton in Beltsville. So it's sort of right on the Prince George's County, Montgomery County line.
Okay, in Beltsville.
My friends who grew up in the down the block went to Montgomery County schools, and my side all went to Prince George's County schools. But like that close, I could throw a stone over the Montgomery County border from where I grew up. But yeah, local kid.
Local kid. And I actually had read. So did you intern for Tony Perkins and Tucker? Was that kind of how you got started?
Tony and Tucker back in the day. So funny story with me and like getting involved in news was that when I was in school, I knew I wanted to do the weather. Like I was like, I want to do the weather. I like it. It's cool. And, you know, I know it pretty well. So we were required my junior year of college to do an internship related to your major. I needed something in the morning because I at that time I was playing lacrosse. So I had lacrosse basically all summer long in the evening. So I could do nothing. And most weather internships, particularly the science-based one, which is my demo, like what I was going for in college, sure, was not the TV stuff. I was going to be like a scientist to actually study the stuff. We were allowed to do it in any section that our major kind of covered, and news was one of those sections. So I looked at just browsing online and I saw Fox 5 was the only one that did a morning weather internship. And lo and behold, I still remember sitting in my bedroom junior year calling Tony and Tucker, and everybody remembers Tony when he was here and Tucker, and they were just inseparable as a team. I mean, they were, you know, Batman and Robin, like literally on some of those weather days.
Mm-hmm.
But Tucker has not changed at all in that. It's been 10 years now since that day. He immediately jumped into like really tough questions that I didn't know the answer to. And then he just jumped back and was just like, I'm just kidding with you. He's like, relax. So Tucker was still cracking jokes back in the day. And that summer was a blast. I mean, Tony's hilarious. Tucker's hilarious. And being able to be mentored by them has just helped my career so much. Even though I never thought at that time I would get into TV, when I ended up coming back to Fox 5, I knew kind of how to bring sort of a looseness to it, because Tucker in particular worked with me from day one, and he's just so, and God, I hope he doesn't listen to this because his head will just get bigger. He's so cool. He's very down to earth. He's chill. He's funny. And he has a way of just getting you to relax and be yourself. And he taught me just all the little tips and tricks about just relax, be yourself, man. No one wants to see a robot on TV. They want to meet Mike Thomas and at the same time get a little bit of weather on the side. So I've taken that to heart ever since. And again, I know Tony's moved on since, but still being able to come in every day and work with Tucker, who's literally like one of my best friends now, it's an absolute blast.
I was going to ask you that. I mean, you and Tucker now have been friends, what, 10 years? I mean, you're even like before Caitlin, you're BC.
Yeah, I was.
You're before
I was
Caitlin.
I like it, putting it that way. I was before Caitlin. And we've been at it for now 10 years. Even when my internship ended, like we still stayed in contact. The whole reason I work at Fox 5 in the first place was actually because of Tucker Barnes, because he recommended me when something opened up. Even though I wasn't in the business, I was working right down the street. And, on the one hand, it was him not wanting to work weekends anymore. And on the other hand, it was just like, hey, I have this guy. He used to work for us. He knows all the systems. Why don't we bring him back and you know, give him a little trial run? So that's what they ended up doing.
Okay, tell me about that. Because, you know, I've asked Tucker this, and Tucker almost makes it sound, did you have another job offer? And Tucker sort of kind of convinced you to take the job. Was that kind of how it unfolded?
Pretty much. So I worked for this amazing company, and I still love the guys, and I still talk to the guys this day. A company called Commodity Weather Group, which was based out of Bethesda. They're completely like on the cloud now. But generally what we did was stock market weather forecasting, which is, you know, a whole different section of weather that no one ever hears about.
Yeah.
It's all about how the weather can affect the prices on the side, like commodity prices, oil prices, gas prices, all of that. So we had a ton of clients that would, you know, call us and get the weather forecast specific for those commodities. But they were a bunch of cool guys, all Penn State guys. So that's how I got that job, was coming out of, I'm a Penn Stater myself. very tight-knit meteorology program up there. So I was able to fit right in. When I found out they were in Bethesda, they basically hired me right away and were just like, hey, come on down and work for us. So wow. I worked for them for about 2.5 years. Great guys in just a small knit company. There were only 12 of us, I think, at max when I left. And it was a very family just kind of vibe to it. And it was a great company. And they didn't want me to leave. Again, they understood that it was my choice. So they didn't beg, they didn't plead. They offered me more money and all of that. But, you know, Fox being a big corporation, it was hard for them to compete as a smaller company with that section.
Sure.
And it was a point in my life where, you know, I was at that time, I was 23 years old. And I know how rare it is for folks to get into, you know, a top 10 market, period. So to be able to try and jump into it first and foremost, like right off the bat.
Yeah.
I just felt at that time in my life, again, I was single. I had just moved into my house up in Columbia. And I was like, if I'm going to roll the dice at any time, I might as well roll it now. So I just decided to give it a go to see how it was. They sort of left me at the time. I'm sure it's expired since. But they kind of gave me some security in that, hey, you know what? If things don't work out, call us back. And we'll happily take you back. He pulled me from that job, and I absolutely love that job. And there are days where you sort of miss it, but it's been a blast here at Fox 5 ever since. But
wow.
Yeah, Tucker essentially was whispering in my ear the whole time, just like, come on, man, like it's TV, you know, nobody gets these offers, come on.
In a way, all right. He was right. I mean, Mike, you must have been, you are very smart, but you must have been very smart in high school. I mean, to go to Penn State and you know, it seems like you're almost telling us $60,000 a year college is almost worth it. It seems like you were in with the guys. You got a job before you left. I mean, you're kind of an endorsement for, you know, a $180,000 college education. I like
well,
this.
I will say, so, you know, high school, I didn't try very hard freshman and sophomore years and didn't do well, but something clicked junior, senior year, and I started doing much better. SATs were fine. I actually didn't go to Penn State right off the bat because of, like you said, that money doesn't grow on trees, and I did not get any sort of full ride or anything like that. So I wasn't about to pay for 4 years, even though I knew Penn State from the beginning was where I wanted to go because they literally have the best weather program in the country for forecasting.
Wow.
But I talked to, and they were actually great with me up there because I talked to their department and they said, you know what, you want to save the money? You can go to any state school and we'll give you all the prereqs. You knock those out for 2 years, it'll save you like $100,000.
Yes.
And then you can come up here and finish your junior and your senior years up here and get a Penn State degree. So I ended up, I went to UMBC, so the Retrievers up in Baltimore. I double majored there in math and physics. That sucked, but we got through it. And then once that was done, we were able to get up to Penn State. And by that time, because there was some law where if there's no undergraduate program offered in the state,
okay,
you can get in-state tuition at an out-of-state school for it. So there was no undergraduate meteorology at any Maryland school at that time. So I was able to go to Penn State with in-state tuition the last 2 years, and it ended up saving a lot of money. And I got a couple of academic scholarships. I'm not going to undersell it. I busted my butt in college to get as much money towards my education as I can because I didn't want to graduate with any debt. So I lucked out there.
So, Mike, what did your parents do growing up? Like, did they, they weren't in media. What were their occupations? What did they do?
No, so my dad is he's not a scientist, but he works on the computer systems and IT and payroll at Johns Hopkins APL, Applied Physics Lab, up near Columbia. And then my mom, actually, she was a social worker for a while when she had, I'm one of three kids, I'm the middle child. When she had her three kids, she stopped doing that, was a stay-at-home mom for a while. And then when my brother and I got old enough, since we were the youngest two, she actually went to work at Dematha Catholic High School, which is where I went to high school. So
no
she
kidding.
Worked in the admissions department there. And it was so wonderful to go to high school every day and see your mother right there in front of all the guys.
Okay, wait, what did she do at the high school?
So she was the admissions, one of the admissions directors. She was like the assistant admissions director.
So did you grow up a good Catholic, or you kind of got in because your mom worked there? Oh, you were a good Catholic.
So I was private school educated my whole life. So I went to Catholic school from kindergarten right on through.
Look at you, little Catholic school. Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Do you see my halo above my head?
It's looking a little fuzzy. I'm just kidding.
It's gotten a little fuzzier over the years.
I grew up Catholic too. Do you still go much? I mean, you really went. I mean,
we do the major holiday. I think particularly after COVID. So we were going a little semi-regularly pre-COVID, but once COVID hit and everything just stopped, we've now worked it to like a major holiday sort of thing. And even since, most of the time with my parents, because, you know, nobody wants to take risks these days, which is fair with the virus. It's mostly a gather in the living room and go to mass at noon on the television.
I know, right? Everyone's at the television. At the podcast stage too. You know, you can listen to like these priests put out a podcast. You're like, okay, good enough. Now, okay, you grew up with two siblings. You're the middle child.
Correct.
Older sister, younger brother. What did they do? Are they still in the area? Are they in science?
So we all live, you know, locally. So the family hasn't gone too far. My sister's down near Fairfax, Virginia. She's actually a doctor. She's the pride and joy of our family. She's not a medical doctor, but a doctor of kinesiology, so physical therapist. And she works for a firm down there. She's actually, shout out to you, Michelle. She's actually pregnant with her second child. So I'm going to be yet another uncle, because she has one already, little Caden, who's just like the pride and joy of our family. For the longest time, the closest thing to a grandson my parents had was my dog, Sid. And he was the pride and joy of the family. But then last year or 2 years ago now, my sister had her first child. Now she's due with number two. Just after New Year's. So it'll be a very interesting holiday season.
That's awesome. I'm sure they love waking up and like seeing you on television. I mean, that's pretty cool. Like a local guy. I mean, that's an amazing story, because Tucker's right. I mean, most people have to go to so many markets to go to DC, you know, to come in DC. And then here you are.
Yeah. And there's so much luck involved the way to get here. And, you know, again, I don't want to undersell myself. I know a lot about the weather, but I knew nothing about television when I got here. And Tucker really had to hold my hand for a little while there to do it. But I do. I feel lucky. I count my lucky stars every day that I'm here. Because you're right. It's a challenging business. It is a super competitive business. Everybody wants to get up to these major market stations. And I do. I feel blessed. I feel lucky that I was able to get this far at this point.
Okay, so you're very young in your career. And there's a lot of talk. I mean, do you think that meteorologists in 10 years, 15 years are still going to be on television? Or do you think it's just everything is going to be predicted by our app and, you know, I don't know, an AI robot?
That's fair. And, you know, that's one of the fears for this job. And I've talked to people about this too, because I, like you mentioned, I am young and I got to try and make, you know, a career out of this for the next 40 years before retirement. And I do think that eventually computing power is going to get there where your application is going to be pretty accurate. At the same time, there's so much that goes on weather-wise. Like, take the tornadoes that happened in the middle
Kentucky,
of
Kentucky. Yeah,
awful, awful stuff. And you know, you're gonna need, like, if there's warnings going up and you want to tune in to see what's going on, I think you're always gonna need that weather person to go to, because nothing replaces that live, you know, hey, this is where it is, this is where you got to take shelter. And even, I mean, the closest thing they've gotten is now your phone will annoy you with a big loud beep if there's a warning in your area. But even I know a lot of people who disregard that anyway, because it warns such a wide area.
Yeah.
That people will always want to know specifics. And I think around here, anytime it snows and anytime there's bad storms in the forecast, if some sort of warning goes up, people are always going to be looking for their friendly weather face on TV. That's my opinion for it. Maybe they'll be your friendly weather face on an app eventually exclusively. But I think in some way, shape or form, your live weatherman is always going to be there.
Who complains the most when it comes to weather? DC residents, Maryland residents, or Virginia residents?
Well, so I have to deal with the Maryland residents the most, being one myself. So I'll be bad to my home state and say Maryland. But certainly, you know, the DC folks, just based on like my Twitter, I would say, the Loudoun County and Fairfax County kids, if their school's not canceled and it's snowing, there you go. They actually take the pot, because they will tweet you an angry mob of students if you predict snow and it's only an inch or you get less than you thought, and then they have school. Don't go on Twitter for the day, because you'll get roasted.
You'll get roasted. Now, talk to me. you're a huge hockey fan, and you played lacrosse. Now, were you ever good enough or almost good enough to play college lacrosse?
Yeah. No, I was. I had a number of offers. I played for a little bit at UMBC, a little bit at Penn State, but I never saw like on-field action. And most of what I did was I ended up my senior year just playing at the club level, which was a blast. But I played against all of those big guys growing up locally because DeMatha was at the time one of the best programs in the country. I'm a decent lacrosse player. My best sport was probably actually volleyball. I played for the Maryland Junior Olympic team back in the day. It was the under 16 team.
You don't seem particularly tall though.
Well, so here's the thing. I got to my current height pretty quickly. So there was a time when I was tall on the under 16 team, but then all my teammates kept growing and I stopped growing. The volleyball, lacrosse sort of took over volleyball at some point there in my early teens.
And you're a hockey fan, right? You're a big hockey fan.
Big hockey fan.
Big hockey guy. Why hockey?
Just because so most of my family themselves are from Pittsburgh, and my cousins up there who were very, very close with, shout out to Steve, Bob, Dave. They're the guys that just every time we would go up, they would be watching hockey. And they take us to Penguin games and all that stuff. So getting involved in that environment from a young age, I started to get fascinated by it. And then they ended up being pretty good when I was younger. And it's just one of those cases where I grew up a fan. I really enjoyed it. I played ball hockey, actually, locally for a while because it was just such a blast. Just something about it. I think it's the fast motion of it. Like, unlike football, which is very start and stop, hockey you can technically just go for the whole 20-minute period if there was no stoppage of play. And I love it about it. And the creativity of the plays and the equalizer of the ice, there's just so many little factors. And I get excited about hockey. It's absolutely my favorite sport to watch. It's one of my favorite sports to play. And even though I am technically, you know, full confession, I am a Penguins fan because that's how I grew up.
I was going to ask you that.
I do so much work with the Caps locally, obviously, since me and Steve Shenaby here at the station, Holly Morris too knows her hockey, but since they're stuck on anchor duty every day, I usually am the one who gets sent down to do the stuff with the Caps because I know the most about hockey, at least on the morning side of things. So we had a great relationship with them down there. It's so nice to know some of the staff and they're a great organization too.
Did they send you to cover Stanley Cup?
Wait. So I was actually on vacation when they did the parade and they won the cup. So I did not get any cup coverage myself. Although, you know, Megan, their PR lady down there, sent me some T-shirts and some stuff. And I was very happy for the city because I generally root, even though I have my team, I love watching great players, and, you know, Alex Ovechkin is just incredible to watch on the ice. So it was great to see him win his cup, and obviously now he's going for the goal scoring record. So I really appreciate good hockey.
Yeah.
It's been great to see the Caps, particularly in D.C., which has been a championship-starved team. And then the Nats won it, and then the Caps won it. Like, that was an awesome year.
It really was. It's kind of crazy to think that we did win two national championships because, I mean, when I came here 15 years ago, I mean, it was so bleak. Like, you know, the Nats, like, didn't even really exist. They didn't exist. You know, they were just talking about it. And then to see, like, all the six, it was just such a, I don't know, it wasn't a sports town. It wasn't a winning sports town. And then to see that.
My dad had, what was at the time, obviously, you know, now the Washington football team. He had season tickets and they were so bleak and bad. And, you know, in some regards, they still have trouble there. So he actually sold his tickets just because he was like, I can't do it. And he had great seats, 50-yard line seats down low because he inherited them from his grandfather and would always take, you know, he tried to convert me when we were kids from being a Pittsburgh fan to a D.C. fan. But, you know, when you would go to, you know, what at the time was the Redskins games as a kid, it was, you know, a lot of doom and gloom and people weren't that happy. So it was harder for me to get into that compared to when we would go to Steeler games up in Pittsburgh with the mom side of the family. So that was sort of where my loyalties kind of switched.
Mike, you know, a couple years ago, you became very popular for doing weathercasts by almost like a spoof on Taylor Swift songs and Madonna. You did Vogue, or did you do almost a mashup of a weather forecast? So
that was, I cannot remember. I think it was our producer, Jeff, here, who asked me initially to do that. But that was back when, I was like my second year here, 2015, I want to say.
By the way, people should Google this. Google Mike Thomas Vogue, Mike Thomas Madonna. I mean, it is really good. I mean, you pretty much went viral, right, for that? I mean.
Well, I only went viral because Taylor herself actually tweeted it. Like, she saw it, and her publicist called and was just like, you know, Taylor just wants to let you know that, like, that was it. She actually did watch it, and she really liked it, and, like, that's why she tweeted it.
That's huge. Mike, did you not say to the publicist, like, let me meet her in real life? You could have been married to Taylor Swift by now. No offense to your girlfriend. Sorry, Sherry.
I went home. I remember that day because I went home. I did it. And, you know, that was one of the things where I wrote it and then I did it on TV. And I was like, that was really cheesy. Like, I remember going home and just being like, oh, my God, that was so cheesy. And then I went home. And since we worked so early, I went to bed at like noon. And then when I woke up at like 8 o'clock at night, my phone had just exploded. And I was like, what in the H happened? I had like 6 calls missed from Fox 5 and all this. And so I never actually got to talk to them directly. I was just told that's what they said. But, you know, shout out to Taylor. We dated for all of 30 seconds.
Dude, she was into you. I mean, that was so good. It was so good. And you actually wrote those yourself.
Yeah. So I took her songs.
Her lyrics. And
I mixed it with whatever the weather forecast was that day. And then we tried to do the same thing. It didn't go quite as viral, but we tried to do the same thing the next week when Madonna came to town. And we got a little bit of a shout out for that, but Madonna never saw that one. And it was kind of cool to see that Taylor actually did see that. She did retweet it. And then that was when you asked me earlier about when did people start wanting to date me. That was around the time that suddenly my inbox started filling up with, are you singles?
But wait a minute. You've stopped doing it. So ultimately, right? I mean, do you do them anymore? Or did everybody kind of behind the scenes sort of think it was a little cheesy and you can't really mix weather with these like music quotes? Like, what happened? I thought, because to me, of course, I'm in entertainment, right? I'm like, Mike Thomas should be like the mashup weatherman and just like go full Madonna. Not that you really, you know, not that you probably wanted to, but I'm like, dude, this could be your thing.
It could be my thing. And I would have been happy to make it my thing. But I think when after the Madonna one, I believe that we sort of hit a lull in like big name concerts coming to the DC area. I think we were getting in the fall and winter at that point. So, you know, the concert season was winding down. And then the next year, I did both of those when I was actually working in the evening. There was a 1-year period or like a 9-month period here where I worked the evening shift with Sue and with our brand new meteorologist at the time, Caitlin Roth. we worked together in the evenings for about a year, and I didn't have any on air duties at that time. I was performing all, you know, write ups and stuff for the website. So that was just supposed to be like a little web special for the website. And then the next year, before the concert season started back up again, I switched to the early mornings. And now they have no time to record it because my shift starts at 3 a.m. It ends at 11 o'clock and we're on air till 11 o'clock. So they don't have any of the camera stuff and stuff set for afterwards. But I will say it's probably not gone forever. And I know COVID, we had plans pre-COVID, but then COVID hit. So once things start to open back up and the world becomes a happy, healthy place again, you might see a little bit more musical weather jib jab.
I feel like you're gonna like gain like 2 million followers. It's like that Nick guy down in Charlotte, like the dancing fox weather guy.
So he's at Fox New York. He does Fox Weather now. But yeah, I see him dancing in the streets of New York all the time. So.
But basically, I mean, truly, that dancing gig put him on the map, right? I mean,
He got 2 million followers on Instagram and like 6 million on TikTok. And you know what? We Tucker and I sometimes pull up his stuff and we're watching and like, we're like, This man can dance.
I know he's real. He's like an incredible dancer. I know he's like somebody to me that could have like been like a Dancing with the Stars pro, like as another lifetime of a job. Yeah, oh, he can dance.
I bet you he's on Dancing with the Stars before his career's done. No doubt about it. I mean, it's just it's a match made in heaven.
But how do you, you know, how do you feel about that? Because I do think it, over the years, and tell me this, do you feel like it's a good thing for your profession, or do you feel like it's in a way it's degrading? You see a lot of weather people doing a lot of things like that. They dance, they have to dress up, you have to do like these Vogue or Taylor Swift mashups, and it's great, right? Because it gets people's attention, and maybe it is great. Or do you feel like, crap, I went to college for like legit science, and now people want to see me in an Elmo costume? You know, I mean,
I'm the costume guy here. So I was the one who had to work all the holidays forever, and I've done the weather as a roasted turkey. I've done the weather as, you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I did it as the Easter Bunny, the pink Easter Bunny. I like bringing that. Obviously, I would never do that if the weather's actually doing anything. But around here, we have so many lulls in the action. Where it's a day like today, which is, you know, whenever this podcast there, it's sunny and 60 degrees outside right now.
Right.
There's nothing to worry about weather-wise. So I don't think it's a problem to show some, you know, obviously pick and choose when you're doing it. You know, tornadoes going through Kansas or through Kentucky, you don't want to be dancing on the air. But at the same time, I think there's room for it in these, where you can let, because I'm more, Mike Thomas is more than just the weatherman. Yeah. And at the same time, you know, the weather is more than just Mike Thomas. So it's nice that particularly here at Fox that they let me do. Like I did Ugly Christmas Sweater Day all day today and wore my little light up Christmas trees all morning this morning. And they let you do that to show that, like, hey, you're a person, you're not a robot. Again, I think there's a time and place where I think if you do it too much, it can be degrading. Like I would be scared. Nick is an incredible guy, but I would be scared to be him because everybody would just know you as you're the dancing weatherman, not just like, is he the first one you're going to turn to when there's a tornado going through your neighborhood? I don't know, because you're like, well, no, he's just the dancing weatherman. On to the next guy. And
oh yeah, it's going to snow. Okay. Now dab for us. Dab.
Yeah, But that's the thing, is I know that Nick is a tremendous meteorologist also, but folks don't, like, I'm scared that folks might not know him that way because they just know him as a dancing weatherman. So yeah. I'm trying not to, I guess you could say stereotype yourself. I'm trying not to get, I like to have fun and be creative here, but at the same time, I don't want to ever get to the point where I'm just known as like the song lyric weather guy.
It's hard. It's a hard thing to do. You guys have a hard path to walk, you know, because it's like now there's so much noise out there, right? Everybody from TikTok stars to Instagram, you know, everybody is going for your attention. And then you see somebody like a Nick, you know, that seems to propel your career. It's hard, you know, to know which way to go.
Right. Right. Now, it's definitely difficult, but I think there is a healthy balance in there somewhere. And like you said, just finding it is the hardest thing in the world. And then, you know, coming up, like, Nick, let's take Nick, because he's the shining example of a weather guy who's just shot up in stardom because of the dance moves. That's not easy to do. Like, even when I wrote that Taylor Swift thing, it took me 6 hours to write that with the forecast. It's not easy.
It's hours. I know we keep talking about him. I got to figure out what his actual last name is. Like, do you know?
I think it's Kozer. Nick Kozer, I believe.
Yeah, Nick. Oh, my God. I follow him. You know, again, like, I've never seen one weathercast he's done. But, you know, I see all the dances. The Dancing Weatherman. That's his title. Yeah, Nick Kozer. Kosir. Yeah, who also works for Fox Company. Mike, would you be doing anything different if you weren't doing weather? Because it does seem like you have a very comedic side to you. Do you ever think about doing improv, performance, acting? You are good at it.
Well, I appreciate it. I really do. I've actually never been one for the, you know, as outgoing as I seem to be.
Yeah.
In my regular life, I'm pretty introverted. Like, I'm big crowds still scare me. I can do it now in front of the camera, and I've gotten much better at going out and public speaking. But big crowds, lots of eyes on you, it still scares me. So I've never been one to really seek out the limelight sort of thing. I like going home to my dog and my little tiny town home up there and just living a quiet life afterwards. I can't see, because I don't really think I'm that funny. And anytime that, like, I do crack a laugh, it's reacting to a situation as opposed to like material I came up with. I don't know how comedians like come up with all that material and then stand up there and do their best. I mean, that's definitely a hard job, but I can't see, like, if the opportunity came along, would I try some acting or something? Sure. But I guess it's one of those things where I guess you could say I probably won't go out of my way for it.
Mike, you've been very fortunate in your career. What's been a challenge that people might not know? What's been challenging? Maybe not even about work, but personal life. Has there been something that you've had to overcome that maybe you haven't shared before that you just are dying to reveal on this podcast?
Dying to reveal. No. So I would say the hardest thing I've probably been through in my life was what I talked about initially, like briefly before I met Sherry. I was in a different relationship with a woman who won't be named on this podcast. We'll call her Susan.
Susan.
We'll just call her Susan. But she broke my heart. She did. She broke my heart. Mm. And so heartbreak was probably the toughest thing. And it was one of those things where, you know, I would say when we first got together 3 years ago, it was sort of Disney fairy tale esque, and where you literally think that there's nothing. And all of our friends and everybody that saw us together was just like, oh my God, these two have it and they're going all the way. And I had, you know, I was had a down payment on a wedding ring. I was getting ready to you know, sign it off for life. And then I went through, you know, I went through heartbreak. It ended rather abruptly. And I have never known that something like that can cause as much physical pain as it actually did.
Yeah.
I was, you know, there were periods where I wasn't sleeping for days. I didn't eat for a couple of weeks. My brother lived with me at the time, and he actually had to physically, like, sit me down and force me to eat. I lost 40 pounds.
Wow.
You know, I stopped. This was the early pandemic, so gyms and everything were closed anyways. But like I became extremely, extremely underweight for what I was. But then, you know, what came from that, that was great. You know, even though it was hard, I knew, like, okay, you'll get through it. Just take it one day. And I will say, I have some amazing colleagues here at work, and, you know, I'll shout out Holly Morris, who was an extremely big help to me during that time. Cause I kind of, when we were finally allowed back to work, I kind of took her aside and she sort of mothered me through those details, and she was fantastic with me. And it was just one of those moments where there were days where you didn't think you'd make it through, but you ended up making it through.
Well, your family must have been very worried. I mean, it sounds like you really went into like a depression, truly.
Oh,
like,
yeah. It was a very bad, and it was a number of factors all at the same time. You know, pandemic, the world shut down. I was isolated and alone. And at one time, this person that I had that I was talking to almost every minute of every day, like we were that close, was just gone. And it was one of those cases of like, it was, you know, extreme amounts of loneliness. I had my dog. My dog got me through, you know, a lot of those days of just sitting in the bedroom, giving Sid all the head pats, and you know, he helped get me through it. My parents don't live far. They, you know, my mom was great. My dad sort of took the tough guy attitude of just like, move on.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I've had a down payment. I'm banking on this. And I mean, you know, you find out, right? Susan basically was very deceitful to you, right?
She was at the end of the day, and you know, it was one of those things that it ended. And since it ended, I found out things that, you know, just
indiscretions that were. I don't know how much you want to go into, but I mean, it's gonna be
probably not that much. But yeah, there was a lot going on that I didn't know about. That just like, I don't know. I guess my advice for anybody going through breakups in the future is don't go exploring after the breakup happens, because it'll just make it worse. But yeah. I was shocked at the things I learned since. I actually went full confession. I went to therapy for a while after that. Like, I checked myself into therapy.
I've been in it for years. Yeah. Not that that's a shock to the audience.
You know what? Shout out to all the therapists out there, because that helped. You know, I told you, Holly helped a tremendous deal here. All of my Fox family therapist helped a tremendous amount here. And then my actual therapist was fantastic. And it helped get me out of the funk. A few months later, I met Sherry. It's been great ever since. And you know, it's,
yeah, good for you.
It was a rough, I would say there were 3 to 4 months there where I don't want to say didn't want to live anymore, but it was just one of those moments where like, you don't really want to get out of bed in the morning. You don't want to do it. It was a deep, deep depression. But I had the toughest thing actually was getting up and going on Fox every morning, putting on that smile and doing the weather forecast that people were used to seeing. That was hard for a few months to do, to bring out of you when you just really don't feel like it inside.
Mike, I think that's awesome that you're sharing it because it helps so many other men. Because to your point, and I know your dad is a loving person, so I'm sure he's just trying to say to you, you know, and I mean, truly, like in a few years, you're probably going to look back and go, oh my God, thank God I didn't marry her. Like, I mean, it was the best thing ever because you're like, you know, whether it's Sherry or whoever you end up with, it's going to be like, oh my gosh, that was like the best thing. But in the time that it's happening, nobody can tell you that. I mean, it's awful.
It never feels that way. And again, I'm like, no. I'm sort of the guy, I will always wear my, I've always said, I'm just going to be me. So I'm sharing this because I'm always going to wear my heart on my sleeve kind of guy.
Yeah.
I'm an emotional guy, and I'm not afraid to admit that, yeah, I went through some very rough times. And heartbreak hits guys as much as it is.
It does, but, you know, men, I think only recently men have felt comfortable talking about it. And, you know, it's so true. It's hard for you guys because you are expected to be less emotional, but it's devastating. You know, you'd counted on that, and it sucks.
Right. It's one of those things where, whether they call it, my therapist called it, I think, ruminating, where like you envision the rest of your life with someone.
Yeah.
And then when it all comes crashing down, you don't see a path. But, you know, again, I won't spend too much time talking about my ex because she doesn't deserve it. But I will say, you know, again, shout out to Sherry. She came in at a very difficult time of my life. And she was actually, you know, I will give her full credit. Because again, I know she's going to listen to this. Hi, Sherry. she stuck by my side when I didn't really want, like, and she was gentle about it too. She didn't force herself into my life, but she had been there in the past too, and she sort of helped me through it in a way. But you know, there was a period of time where I said, "You don't want to date me? Like, go date somebody else." It's I'm rough right now. I'm beat up. But, you know, she packed her patience, and little by little, she helped me through it. And now she's, you know, now I love her with all my heart. So I've been very fortunate to find her through the chaos of all of that.
Well, and also, I mean, I don't know how you feel, but I would imagine, like, going through everything you went through, it's like trying to trust people again. Like, it's hard. Like, I'm sure you and Sherry have to work through that. Like, anybody. Yeah,
it's the hardest thing in the world. You don't trust. And it's funny because, you know, I started not trusting friends. I started not trusting family. You know, you wonder after something like that happens, who's being honest with you and who's not. And it's something that, you know, and I mentioned, you know, when she moved in initially, Sherry moved in, that we had some clashes, and there were trust issues. It was baggage. We all had that baggage from, you know, previous loves and all.
Everybody
got that in some way, shape or form. But navigating those waters was rough and choppy for some time, but thankfully I think we finally hit some smooth sailing.
Good for you. Thanks for sharing that. I think that helps a lot of men because it's not easy, and I think just recently men do feel like, hey, they can talk about it. So good for you, Mike Thomas, and better things ahead, and fuck Susie, so, or Susan, whatever the hell her name is. Now, look, we're ending these podcasts.
No comment.
We're ending these podcasts with kind of a rapid fire of questions. So let's rapid fire Mike Thomas. Mike Thomas, were you named anything in high school? Were you the class president? Were you the treasurer? Were you the class most likely to become a weatherman?
No, the only thing I was named was I was given a nickname on my lacrosse team called the Crease Cranker, was the name that had stuck with me for the longest time. Crease Cranker. So in lacrosse, the position I played was what's called the crease, which is the guy right in front of the goal. His job is to catch the ball and put it in the goal real quick. So in high school, I was known for catching the ball, taking a full windup, even though I was like 5 feet. It's the equivalent of Alex Ovechkin taking a slap shot from right in front of the goalie. Like, I would full wind up from 5 yards out and just crank it past the goalie, even though, you know, at that range, you're just supposed to kind of pick your spot and put it in. So I was known as the Crease Cranker. And then in college, once I started studying meteorology, the lacrosse players love their nickname. So on the lacrosse teams that I played for afterwards, all called me Doppler. He has Doppler radar. So I was either Dopp or Doppler.
Mm. Without naming the name of the business, what's the worst assignment they've set you on? You know, was it dogs eating their own feces, or like, what did you have to like do? And you're like, God.
No, you know what? They are very good with the fun stuff for me here because I tend to be more of a kind of down, like, let's keep away from the politics and let's keep away from. But there was one time where I was just the closest one and I got sent to a murder. And I had to.
Mike Thomas reporting on crime?
Murder, not something to laugh about, obviously, but I remember talking to my boss at the time, and I was on the phone, and I went, you really want me to do this? Are you sure you want me to do this? So, like, you know what I do, right? And so I had to go, and the chief of police for D.C., I think it was Graham Newsom at the time, like, walked up, and he was like, all right, what do you want to know? And I'm like, I actually don't know.
No clue.
I do not, and I still to this day, I don't know how to handle the crime scene. I don't know how to handle politics. So I have happily told, you know, the fine folks here who control what we do. I said, it's best to leave me out of those situations. I understand at that time it was a breaking news situation and they wanted to get somewhere there quick, but it was an awkward line of questioning. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, just to remind people, we're not making light of it, but I mean, there is like comedy and things that happen. And I mean, you are a bizarre choice for that.
Right.
So,
I am an awful choice. And no, it was a very sad situation. And thankfully, they did catch the guy that did it. But it was a very situation in Prince George's County where a young woman lost her life. So again, not making light of that at all, because that's awful.
Sure, sure.
I could not believe when they got me on the phone and they were like, we're going to have you do it. And I was just like, really?
What's the best piece of advice that Tucker Barnes has ever given you? Whether it was career, personal, what's the best piece of advice?
Well, he's standing outside the door right now.
Oh, so we have to say something nice.
Looking in. So, Tucker, the question is...
There's Tucker.
Oh, my God, Mike Thomas!
Tucker Barnes, wait a second. What's one thing we need to know about Mike Thomas that we don't know as the audience?
Okay, I am not sure he changes his underwear every day. I'm not sure. Really, I'm not, Sarah. I got to be honest. See a lot, okay, behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I don't see a lot of changing undergarments, and that concerns me.
Is it the smell that gives it away?
Yeah, what is it?
It's not always the smell.
I don't get paid as much as you. I can't afford the unknown.
Mike is secretly talented. I know on air, we're still trying to polish his stuff, but behind the scenes, this kid's got potential.
Oh, okay. What an endorsement.
Yeah. I hope to make it to the good day couch.
No, and I don't mean with your... Call his girlfriend about potential.
Yeah. Oh,
okay, but... goodbye.
We've covered that. Bye, bye. Tucker Barnes, everybody.
He gives me a B minus every time, I promise. All right. Look, one piece of advice, literally the best piece of advice he ever gave me was when I was an intern here. And, you know, we do these, they film us on the green screen and they, have us do these fake weather videos for, you know, you to take back to college. And the first few times he would just come out, like after watching it in the back, he would come out with me, just pull up a chair, kind of right in front of the green screen like this. And he'd kind of say, you know, F the camera, you know, look at me and just like, let's have a weather conversation. And he'd get me to just chit chat about the weather with him while recording it, just to make it a more natural feel. So the best advice he actually ever gave was, don't be a robot. Don't practice your scripts. No one's here for a science lesson. Be yourself, have fun, and let folks know what they can experience weather-wise. So as cheesy as it sounds, be yourself was literally the best piece of advice that Tucker's ever given me.
When Tucker and Caitlin started dating, were you secretly pissed? Like you were, you know, she was basically stealing your best friend. I mean, were you a little low key, like, you know, this weather woman has come in, scooped my best friend.
What was tough on Caitlin, and this was tough, was, you know, Julie Wright was who she came in and
yes.
You know, we loved, I started, you know, back when Julie was, and we loved, I still talk to Julie every now and then. And Julie is like the nicest, sweetest lady. She did, for anybody, I'll give away the dirt. She chose to leave. She, you know, it,
yes.
It wasn't one of those situations otherwise. But Caitlin was the one who immediately had to come in and fill those shoes. She just did traffic for the first summer. And that was how Tucker and her met, was she wasn't doing weather. She only did traffic for those first 3 months, filling in for Julie, which is the toughest shoes in the world to fill because Julie's such a big personality.
Oh my God. And you know, for listeners that, for viewers too, that are watching and listening that remember, I mean, Julie and Tucker had great chemistry, you know, I mean, just as friends,
right.
You know, Julie's been a long time married to her husband, but they really were like two pals, you know, two besties having a great time and they would joke with each other. I mean, they had great chemistry. That's very hard to replace.
unbelievable chemistry. It really was. It was always a joy to watch. Back when they were together. And when I first got to Fox, and you know, I credit Julie Wright with so much of giving same kind of deal. She was like a female version of Tucker, down the earth, chill, fun. And they both together really helped me when I first started actually working at Fox. And I was this nervous 23-year-old kid who had never been on TV before. And they both just got me to chill and relax and have fun with it. And I credit both of them so much with me still being here today and not being somewhere else.
She's an awesome human being. Final question. You know, when it works out with Sherry, are you worried that you guys are going to kind of become Joe Exotic? Will you have this menagerie of animals? I mean, she's in a veterinarian. You've got a dog. I mean, you've got your kind soul. I mean, I sort of see you living with a bunch of birds, maybe a monkey, you know, a bunch of rescue dogs. Are you kind of worried that you guys could become pet hoarders?
No, I'm already worried about that. It's already coming true. That's the sad part.
I knew something about you seems like you'll attract stray animals.
So not just me. Like, I've always been, people have always been impressed. When I was really young and my parents were looking for a new house to buy, there was this one house that they were looking at with the realtor where there was a dog locked in like a cage in the basement. And I snuck away from them and I went into the dog cage in the basement and was playing with the dog. And then the realtor came down the stairs and went, "Oh my God, like he bites. Like, what are you doing? Like, he's in there for a reason." But like, he was actually like this very sweet little dog, but it freaked my parents out and I never got to tour another house with them again.
They're like, "Mike,
I've always sort of been like the dog whisperer, I guess, in my family, just because I always really wanted one. But my parents were always like, no, because they didn't want to deal with the hassle of growing up with a dog and, you know, putting it in kennels and stuff when we travel, because we traveled a decent amount when I was young. But as soon as I moved out, like one of the first things I did was I got Sid. So because I always wanted a dog and I was happy with just one. Then one of my roommates from college moved in and he brought his two dogs.
And we had
three dogs at the house, which was just chaos. And they all really, because I was the one who would always walk them, feed them, play with them compared to my other roommates and stuff like that. They would always hang around me. And now that same thing has happened with Sherry. So Sherry's come in and she had her own dog and a chinchilla that she brought.
Oh, here we go.
And so it begins. And Sherry has the kindest heart in the world. And folks at Fox don't know this. So you'll get the breaking news here. But about 2 weeks ago, she called me sort of semi-like upset from work. And I'm like, "Oh, what's wrong, hon? What's wrong?" And she's like, "There's this cat. There's this cat here."
Oh, here we go.
So apparently, you know, I don't know the full story, but apparently the owners had brought it in. It had some sort of very minor medical issue. But instead of like fixing it, the owners were just going to put it down.
Yeah, they were like, "Bye."
They were like, we'll just get a new cat. You know, you can kill this one," which is awful. Like, and that's I have never personally understood people who can just toss animals like
I hate cruelty to animals. I hate it. I mean, it's the worst thing. I'm kind of with your parents. They're a pain in the ass, but I can't stand when people abuse animals. It's the worst. Right. So
like the pain in the ass comes in the financial. Like, we went to Chicago a few weeks back and just for someone to watch the dogs for a weekend was $500. We're like, "Oh God." But you know, like I said, Sid helped me so much through the tough times I went through. And then even before then, raising him as a puppy, I know it's not comparable to parenthood, period. But, you know, maybe it's a little starter role, because I got Sid when he was 6 weeks old, I think, is when I picked him up from the farm. He was a little farm dog that got born to a couple of Goldens. So went and picked him up in Delaware, brought him home, and having to, you know, get up every 2 hours, take him outside, make sure he gets to the potty. It was a very rewarding experience back then, paid off big time. But anyway, so Sherry at her veterinary clinic, she called me and she was like, "They're going to put the cat down. It's like a $20 fix. Like, can we fix it? And can they surrender the cat to me? And you know, we'll bring him home." I'm allergic to cats.
Oh,
so,
boy.
You know, I was, and by the way, this was not the first phone call of this I've had. We've had offers for puppies, squirrels,
look,
ferrets.
Face it, your next nickname is going to be Menagerie Mike. I mean, we're headed to Menagerie Mike status.
I do worry about the fight, because I know how expensive it is to raise an animal, and the dogs are expensive. And her dog's a senior dog, tons of medication and all that. But we did decide to take in this cat. So she finally convinced me. She fixed the cat right up. She's very good at what she does. Got the cat right fixed up, and like the next day,
it was home, and here I am with this cat.
Become a pet rescuer. My mom, I will leave you with this. My mom in Maine, her neighbor, they rescue pets. Now they, I don't know, they must have literally like 50 animals now. Ducks, horses, pigs, dogs, cats, everything. Anyway, they just got somebody just wrote them a $250,000 check to take care of these animals. Yes, because they were so moved by their heart of taking in these stray animals. So you and Sherry, this could be you guys. I mean, you guys will be getting donations left and right. You know,
one of those things. If the money was there, like, I could totally see. Because I do. I love animals to death. I'm a very financially cautious person, I think is what you can say. So I'm aware of all the costs. And so every time we have these conversations, I'm like, Sherry, you know how much a cat is a year? Like, and then I Google it. I'm like, look, it's like $2,000 a year, though, a cat. Do we have that money?
That's crazy.
And, you know, We have those kind of conversations. But, you know, if I was like, who wasn't it Kirk Cousins who owned or who was the Washington football player who owned all of these like dogs that did it? I thought it was Kirk Cousins that has like 50 dogs back here when he was on the Washington football team.
Really?
That he had all rescued.
Oh,
like
wow.
If I'm one day making millions upon billions of dollars doing Fox 5 weather, buy me a nice plot of land. But I'll tell you what, my little, you know, 1,300 foot small town home up in Columbia can't really take on too many more pets at this point.
Can't. Mike Thomas, you've been a treat. Thank you for revealing so much, being so honest on this podcast. Social media, where can we follow you?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram, Mike Thomas Fox, and then I'm on Twitter at Mike T Fox 5, and Facebook, Mike Thomas Fox Live as
and
well.
And Mike, when can we watch you?
So if you're crazy and up real early, 4 to 6 a.m., I'm on 4 to 6 a.m. every morning. And then usually I'd say 2 out of the 5 days of the week, I'm out doing something fun, something around town during the rest of the hours. So you'll always see me peek in here and there. Sometimes I did traffic today. So I'm the jack of all trades here. You could see me in any regard between 4 and 11 in the morning. So just watch the whole thing.
We'll watch the whole thing. Mike Thomas, thank you so much. That was great.